Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Talk about the influence of Suzanne Northrop and John Holland. I wasn't too familiar with them. I only dabble, really, in research of the mediumship type stuff. So talk a little bit about them and how much of an influence they had on your work, because they obviously had a big, big influence.
Yes, Suzanne Northrop had the major influence because she was the one that actually reunited me with my son. And like I said, I found her from that book from the two professors that wrote The Afterlife Experiments.
Yes.
Just by going to the back of the book. That's how I came across her and her website. Now, on her website one time, I found she's got a place where a lot of her followers can do chats and talks back and forth.
Yeah, like a message board.
Yeah, a message board. I was on there one day just looking at her, reading some of the messages, and somebody mentioned John Holland coming to Seattle. And they're anxious to go, and I'm sitting there going, who's John Holland? Just like you just said.
Yeah.
You don't follow. I go, who's John Holland? So I did a search on Google and stuff like that. I found out he's another top name medium. And right now he's got books out of Hay House, and he's with Hay House and travels on tour a lot through the lady that owns that book publishing company. Well, I went to one of his seminars, and it was, you know, a small, not as big as John Edward when he came down. There were about 3,500 people that went to his. Well, this first seminar with John Holland, there was only about 100, 150 people that came. So the less people that go to a seminar reading, you've got a better chance of receiving a reading from that medium. And so the first time we went there, he was very interesting. He does it a little bit different than Suzanne. Everybody has their own way of doing it, what they want to start. Well, he was doing a book signing right in the middle. He would give a speech about himself. And then before he started his readings, he would do his book signing, whereas Suzanne Northrop, she would wait till the very end of her whole seminar event, and she would do book signings. Well, this very first time with John, I talk about him a couple times in the book because there's a lot of unique things that happen. Well, we're walking up with a book for him to sign, and I just mentioned him. We didn't talk about this earlier, but my experiences with the television number thing I talked about with 29 coming on the screen, and also the radio reading with Suzanne, the number thing with the 836 and the 24 minutes to 9, that appeared that she got that off the website when I was doing a research thing on her website with the people that follow her, what they thought about that, about communication with numbers and basic things like that. I wanted another survey, pros and cons.
Yeah.
Well, that wound up in her second book, and I didn't know it. Without my name, it just said something. She was talking about numbers being a way that the spirits love to communicate with their loved ones and yada, yada, yada.
She used your story.
Yeah, she used a story. We were there and bought her second book in person, my daughter and I. I took my daughter. My wife wasn't able to go. And we went there. We didn't have a reading, but I got my daughter into what was going on because I said, when I die, you're going to take over. Well, we bought the book. Very next day, I started reading, and there it is on pages 19 and 20. That story, it flabbergasted me. But this is also part of the book because on pages 19 and 20, you add those two numbers together, there's your 39 again, John's name. And so I'm walking up in line, and I just mentioned to him why he signed in the book. I said, well, I said, this was a real good show. I'm happy you came to Seattle. I says, the last medium, you know, that I saw was Suzanne Northrop, and she actually mentioned something, you know, about us in her book. And he just drops his pencil. He shoves his chair back, and he looks at me. He points his finger right up at me. He goes, you're him! And I, you know, so I start blushing now, and my wife's standing next to me. I look, I says, him? Yeah, aren't you the guy, your son, the communication on the television and some number theory and all that stuff? And I go, yeah, that's me. He says, oh, Suzanne talks about your story up and down the East Coast. You know, we're in Seattle now. I says, oh, really? He says, yeah. He says, I'm going to be talking with her over the phone on Monday. You want me to tell her you said hello? I says, yeah, fine. You know,
yeah.
So that just surprised me. But I was never one-on-one with Suzanne. her assistant that handled her websites mm-hmm. and different things like that. Her and I kind of became an email friend because when all these various things would happen at Suzanne's seminars or when I was on a TV show, there was a talk show up here in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
That something happened. And it was a last minute thing. Well, they asked me to forward this information to her secretary, so to speak, so she would get this information and compile it.
Yeah.
So I was friends with her assistant or her secretary, whatever you want to show, you know, call her. But she eventually left. But Suzanne and I were never really one-on-one with each other. The only time I had any communications with her was at the seminars I went to where she was there. I'd identify myself. She signed some books for me. And if I had a question, the one time when I found my son and I was reunited with him, I had a whole list of questions there. And I was able to take time after the seminar and spend about 15 minutes with her, you know, yeah. showing her stuff about my story. And, when these mediums come down out of a seminar, they're still in a high.
Yeah.
They've got a, whatever they have to do, you know, to talk with the spirits, they're still on an energy high. So you don't want to spend too much time with them. You need to let them, you know, wind down a little bit. So, you know, she just said to forward this information back to her office. And so that was my communication with Suzanne that way through her assistant. And John Holland, kind of the same thing every so often, you know, at some of the stuff we would go to. But
now, do they know about your book? Have they read your book? Have there been any communication about the book?
Well,
are they fans of it yet?
They are so huge, so to speak, in the psychic realm that I don't get an answer. I have given them complimentary books, you know, each one of them.
Yeah.
All I can get is feedback. I've got a great story that shows how my son's name came on the front of the book. Originally, when the book was under publication, it was Dennis Spaulding, and it was the story, My Search for the Afterlife. Mm-hmm. And there's a story with a medium of how my son's name got on there. Well, I was talking with him one day. I was going to be on his radio show. And he had told me that John Holland, he was scheduling him for an interview also. And he had mentioned that he was in contact with Dennis Spaulding, one of his, you know, that was talked about in the book. He's, oh, yeah, Dennis, yeah, he's really getting around, isn't he? So he knows who I am by name. And when I've come up to some of his seminars where one, it was an all-day seminar and he was part of it, you know, and on a break I happened to run into him. And he says, I saw you sitting in the audience. You think you're going to come to one of these and I don't recognize you? You know, so they haven't really said, but by that point, he had not gotten the book when he had said that one.
Yeah.
But I've never gotten feedback on the book. It's just, which is fine, because people would say, well, if they know you, you know, how do you know what they're telling you is truthful?
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, right. And I said, well, you have to believe. I says, you have to put yourself in this person's place, like Suzanne Northrup. Over 20-some years, maybe almost 30 years. John Holland, same thing, ever since he was a kid. Are these mediums going to jeopardize their reputation in front of people to come to you and tell you something that maybe they remember a little bit from something else, maybe bits and pieces? Why would they put their reputation on the line to do something like that?
Yeah.
You have to look at the reality of that and go, what's coming through them, you believe in their gift. And what it is, it's a gift from God for these people, John Edwards, Suzanne Northrup, John Holland. You go on. And I found ones that are not as popular now that I've been on their radio shows talking. And these people, which one I can talk about being reunited with another son. You know, these people have a gift, and I go with it.
Now, you said earlier you don't go to the shysters. How does one separate a more legit medium from someone who's, you know, not on the up and up? Is there any sort of way to tell?
Well, through my research, I mean, I go through a lot of stuff. I came across this psychic weekly magazine. It's called ofspirit.com. The gentleman's name who puts this out is Bob Olson. He has spent his lifetime as a non-believer at first, until something happened in his life and he went to a medium. And this medium wowed him. And now his, what he does, he puts out a list of mediums he has personally gone to, like an investigative reporter.
Yeah.
On this. That's what it's all about. And that's what his magazine now is all about. It gives you books he recommends. It gives you mediums he recommends. That is not right out in the public eye. Like people say, oh, Sylvia Brown, John Edwards, stuff like that. Yes, those are gifted mediums. He admits that. But he gives you these ones that you may not be aware of. And this is how I found the gentleman where I talk about my son's name on the book cover. That's, I found him through this website. And this is the same website with this gentleman, as picky as he is. He just started an offshoot website called griefandbelief.com, and my book is on his recommended reading list.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. And it wound up on another medium's, who also I've been on her radio show. She has put my book on her recommended reading list. So it just takes a lot of investigation, but this is a good place to start. It's called ofspirit.com, and it recommends book. It recommends mediums. And then you can go to these mediums. When you have a successful reading, you go to their link page and find out who they're linking to. And they might even be recommending another medium where they have had success or something.
Yeah. So you got to do your research.
Yeah, oh, definitely, definitely. You just don't go, your friend says, oh, go to Mary right down the road here, you know, whatever. So.
Now, you said, like, when you went to the first seminar, you didn't get a reading, you're kind of disappointed. What's the general atmosphere at these seminars? Are there people who get upset because they don't get a reading? Because, like you said, with some of these John Edwards ones, there's like 3,000 people there or something like that. I mean.
Oh, yeah. And in the John Edwards, I think there was only maybe about 12 people that get it. Most people, if they understand what this is all about, if you're meant to have a reading, you know, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
But some people, if you're not ready, in other words, if you just recently lost your child and you're not ready to accept something like this, more than likely your spirit, friends, family, relatives, aren't going to choose to come through. But, yeah, there are people that get upset. When I was on Northwest Afternoon this one time, the person I talked with after the show wanted to get a tape, she says that there are people that call the show sometimes and says, hey, I was here and blah, 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 and they spent too much time reading this person and that person, and I never got a reading.
Yeah.
What happened on that specific show is talked about in the book.
Yeah.
But it all comes about unexpectedly. This was a taping of a second show when Suzanne Northrup was in town. And they wanted to do two shows, one live and one taping for In the Can, in case something came up where some other guest at another show never showed up, they could put this on in an emergency.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the taping, the guy says, stand up, and we're all starting to go out. And then all of a sudden, the director calls down and said, no, he was unhappy with one of the six-minute segments he taped, and he wanted to do six more minutes of reading. So we all sit back down, and this is what I call my overtime, that this was meant to happen. She reads somebody first, a couple rows down from me, and then the host say, well, do you have any more energy, Suzanne, before we wind up the show? And she goes, yes, I've got a real strong energy. Sean. She belts out.
Oh,
she
wow.
don't know. She doesn't know I'm in the studio. She has
yeah.
no way of knowing. I hadn't seen her for over a year. And a girl in front of me goes, raises her hand, and she goes, my name's Shauna. She goes, no, this is a strong male energy. And I raise my hand. I says, I've got a son, Sean. And she says, well, why would he be showing me airplanes? And I says, I'm an air traffic controller. I'm with you. And I, you know, and the host stands me up. Well, when I said something about this was not my first reading.
Yeah.
Well, the show host got a little bit indignant with me. She goes, well, Jesus, if this is your first, my God, are you, you know, made me feel like I was in there hogging readings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm going, wait a second. I can't tell the spirit world who to come to through this medium type thing. Kind of defending myself in a
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was maybe an answer to your question.
Why don't you, one story that I really enjoyed that would probably be pretty enlightening for the listeners is the story of the wedding picture that you were at a, I think
oh,
you were at,
yeah.
you were at a funeral or a reception to a funeral, and a situation came up where you had almost a vision, and it turned out to be a self-fulfilling prophecy type of thing. Why don't you tell that story, if you don't mind, because it's really it's a great story, and it is very unique within this within your book, because it's one of the few times where you sort of have like a vision that comes true.
It was my mom's funeral. We had to fly back from Seattle, Cleveland, Ohio, to bury my mom, and we were at her funeral. And after the services, everybody was invited upstairs, you know, for the food and everything like that. And I got a lot of compliments from people that were at my brother's funeral a year earlier. I was invited to speak at my brother's funeral that time, and where I thought I was talking for about 5 minutes, I rattled on for almost 45 minutes, much to the chagrin of the funeral staff who wanted to get the doors closed. As we got upstairs, I see this one lady there, and I couldn't remember who it was. And my younger brother, him and I were sitting across from each other. I said, "Who's that lady there?" He says, "That's Rita." I said, "Rita?" He says, "Mike's wife, Mike." He says, "Okay, Jack, who was my older brother that died a year earlier." He says, "He was Jack's wife, Becky's brother, and he died many years ago. When you were younger, you used to play cards with him over at Jack's house. That's his wife." I says, "Oh." He said, "Now, Mike's been dead for a lot of years."
Yeah.
He said, "But that's Rita." I said, "Okay, I got it. I remember."
Yeah.
So I got up, walked over, and thanked Rita for coming to my mom's funeral. She said, "Dennis, I wouldn't miss your mom's funeral. She has been with me for so long. And, you know." Well, she said, "I want you to meet my daughter." I says, "Cool." She says, "Guess what? She's getting married next month." I said, "Oh, really?" So I said, "Hi, how you doing?" I gave her that little congratulatory hug.
Yeah.
And then as I did that, all I see in my mind is a church, an altar, and a picture in there. I just saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I let her go, and Rita's standing behind me, yanking on my jacket, excited, jumping up and down. She's just saying, "Guess who's going to walk her down the aisle? Guess who's going to walk her down the aisle?" And I says, "Rita, have you ever thought about putting a picture of Mike up on the altar so he can also see his, you know, daughter walk down the aisle?"
Yeah.
Well, that smile and happiness drops. She says, "Are you crazy?" I said, "What?" She says, I haven't gotten over Mike's death yet. After all of these years," she says, "I would be a basket case at my own daughter's wedding." And her daughter says, "You know, Mom, I was thinking the same thing." And she goes, "What are you talking about?" She says, "What he just said about having Dad's picture up there, but I know, you know, how you are about Dad, I just haven't brought it up." And the mom starts crying. She goes, "Baby, I didn't know that." Then I said, "Rita, can I talk with you for a second?" I pull her away. I tell her what's going on in my life.
Yeah.
I tell her everything that's happening. I said, "This is what I saw in my mind." I said, "I don't normally get this, but this is what I saw." I says, "I'm taking it that if she's getting married within a month's time, your husband, Mike, it was his last chance to get this through to somebody. And knowing the situation I'm in right now with my son and how open I am to this stuff, that I would see this and I would now, like I'm doing right now, tell you that was his last chance to be at his daughter's wedding." And she's looking at me. She says, "Let me tell you something." She says, "On Mike's deathbed, his last words to me, no matter how long it will be, I will be at my baby's wedding. Trust me." And she said, "Dennis, you have given me something to think about." And she gives me a big hug. And then my nephew was going to be going, you know, to that wedding.
Yeah.
And I had told him what had happened when we got back to our house, more of my, you know, the family thing with the death, you know, you go back and people come over.
Mm-hmm.
He told me what his Aunt Rita had said. He said, "Yeah, my Uncle Dennis, kind of amazing and funny at the same time. He can say the right thing at the right time. It just amazes me." Well, a couple weeks later, he calls me out of the blue. He had never called me before. We're just getting ready to walk out of the house, and I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, Uncle Den, I just want to tell you, Aunt Rita and, you know, her daughter, they're on their way to get that picture in line to put it up on the altar."
Okay.
So it just made me feel really good. And I got to really see how the medium sees something.
Yeah.
Now it hasn't happened a lot. you know, that was, I would say, one of my first, and I'm still waiting to see some other ones, but because I was helping somebody and it was so close to the deadline where that event would be over for Mike, he did what he had to do, and I was receptive to it, and I felt very good that I could help him.
Yeah. Now, do you recommend people choose, like, a number or an animal to share with their loved one before they pass on so that that sort of communication can be facilitated? Is that something that you recommend?
I wouldn't say choose. I would just say you start developing your own spiritual awareness and let them choose how they want to come to you, where it's, you know, when you can recognize that sign. Now, like I said, the dragonfly has been brought up. That's because I was having a reading, and this was brought up to me.
Yeah.
Now I am receptive to it, just like a song was brought up to me, Crimson and Clover by Tommy James and the Shondells. That is a special song. Every time you hear it, that is a gift from your son saying, "Hi, Dad, how are you?" And many, many times I've been driving or sitting at a restaurant sad about something or whatever. Get in the car, turn on the radio, Crimson and Clover, things like that. So it isn't something I have directed for myself. It's something that has come through my research, through stuff that has brought to my attention that it happened. So I could not say no when on somebody's deathbed, "Well, you come back to prove to me that you by this number." I have heard stories that people have talked with their loved ones and said that, "When you cross over, let me know you're okay by doing this and this and this." I have read stuff where that has happened.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say, no, don't do that. I mean, if that works and they do that, wow, what a gift that is to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how did it feel to write your story in the first person? I mean, a lot of people put out books that are sort of research-oriented and, you know, they're sort of cocooned and safe. That the book is sort of, you know, written in the third person or something, but yours is written in the first person. You really put yourself out there. It took a big risk in a way to like make the story about yourself and to shine that criticism back onto yourself. It's a very brave choice too. Well, what did you think about doing that? The story in the first person. That's just the way you thought it had to be told.
It's the way it had to be told. It's the way I try to tell the story now. I speak from my heart. We are trying to help people. We are trying to let people just understand what our story is about. People that have not lost a child cannot really understand what you go through, what your feeling is.
Yeah.
And criticism, well, like I said, belief, you know, everything. I'm 60 years old. I don't need to, you know, worry about people, "Oh, this is this or that is that." Well, that's fine. This is, we're trying to help people. The people that want our help are drawn to us. It's just like when we ran the kiosk cart at the mall. People would see our book up there. They'd see my signage to get their attention. I would have stuff on there that says, "Your lost loved ones are only a thought away." Now people, even kids, little kids, teenagers, you see them walking by, you can read their lips.
Yeah.
And I could guarantee when that couple, kids or whatever, walked to the end of the mall, as soon as they read my sign, they're thinking of somebody that just died. When they come back, they read it again, they're still thinking of that person that died. Now, that person up there that died is happy with me. They've opened up the mind just a crack in their loved ones where they're getting some thoughts. Now, maybe they're going to react on that, maybe not. Now, it takes a special person to be drawn over to me to talk about the book and whatever it is they want. And I would get references from these people, certain things like the one came over. And her mom that died, her birthday was mine, February 10th. Her dad was a conductor. And at the mom's funeral, they heard the train off and the whistle. And she says, "Yeah, you know, her grandfather was a conductor." Well, so was my grandfather. The parallels, and I wrote about that on my website. I had a monthly thing going on at the time.
Yeah.
And I wrote about the parallels of people that came up. Everybody that comes up to talk to me, I listen to their story. And all of a sudden, I will hear what I think was a parallel that drew them to me. Because when I start talking about my story, about them, or offering to put the name of their loved one, I've got this, the Garden of Flowers on my website. It's a cemetery on the internet, and it's free whether people buy the book or not. It's a place to help these people to place the name of their loved one on this site. They can go there away from any critics or skeptics in the comfort of their own home. They can look at this name on the site. It starts out with a nice waterfall, some poems and that. The names are there. Now you have beautiful flowers sitting underneath. And they can listen to the pan flute music playing Wind Beneath My Wings as they meditate. They empty the baggies they've been carrying for some time in their mind. Maybe they got to the hospital 10 minutes late and Dad passed. They never got a chance to say what they wanted to say to Dad. This is a place you can empty that stuff, and hopefully you're going to feel that psychic hug from your loved one.
Yeah. Just talk a little bit about the journey of the book, because part of the book, I really liked this too, was part of the book is the story of the book itself, which is really interesting, and how the book started out sort of as a message from your son through Suzanne Northrup, and then you wanted to really sort of do it as like a short story thing through her people, and then it turned into a full novel. And,
right.
And then you were having troubles with getting it published, and now here it is, I'm holding it in my hand. So, you know, that must have been an exciting and at times difficult journey.
It is. It originally started out, I was just taking notes. I was to find my son. That's it. I want to find my son, and I was just taking notes of things I was doing and basic things like that and, you know, numbers and dates and things like that. I just keep a track of stuff. And then partway through, the thought came, well, maybe I can share this with people. Suzanne Northrup came on the scene, so my mind started thinking, while I'm writing this stuff, well, maybe I can offer her. Like I said, I never really had one-on-one communications with Suzanne, only at the readings.
Yeah.
Maybe I can offer her my story through her assistant, that maybe she could take this short story I've got and find maybe two or three other short stories from other followers that I'm sure have stories, and she can put these together in her next book. Then I'm getting some of my information out to people that are going to, you know, help people out.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of got nixed by her publishing company. And it was at a reading just prior to this or right after this, trying to remember, that I'm getting this reading, and she brings up in front of the audience, you know, it was my son coming through and saying, well, why is he showing me numbers? And I said, oh, gotcha, I can talk about this. Start saying about my number theory. Well, why is he showing me a book? Ah, final thing. You know, well, because I was trying to clinch on that, the audience.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm writing about this. This is our story and so forth. And now it's up to you to make this decision. You know, are you going to, you know, help further our cause type of a thing?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't work. You know, when I got the rejection after that reading at a seminar, and the publishing company said, nah, they didn't want to do that. And about a month or so later, I see another medium, famous medium, that's taken up the same type of a thing, soliciting information from his followers to put a book together about things that happened in their life. They would not get any money for it or whatever. Well, I started thinking, I'm going, maybe this is our story. Not for somebody else. This is for us.
Yeah.
My son and me, to tell this story. And then once that realization sunk in and I acted upon it, I thought, well, here I go. I got an 85-page, two-part, you know, short story looking at me. Well,
yeah.
If I'm going to do a book, then I got to break it down into chapters. And I said, okay, I'll break it down here, 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 and here. And then as I started breaking it down into chapters, a wealth of information started coming to me. I couldn't believe it. It went from 80, 90, 110, 120, 140, 150, 210, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, I do talk about that, the publishing headaches and how I came about going to author houses, a story in there, how my website names came about with the error in it and stuff like that, of all the meaning that shows the help I'm getting from the afterlife.
Exactly.
And as you're going to see, book one, I'm not going to say how it ends, but that's why book two is here now.
Mm-hmm.
Book one originally started where I had my name on there. Now, you're in book number two. When I talk about my story, I say it is uniquely authored from beyond the grave by my deceased son. I'm a co-author. Now, that is validated during the first chapter of book number two. And what has happened there, I found this medium through this magazine, Upspirit.com. I called him, and we had a one-hour phone reading scheduled. It had to be canceled one time because of a lot of hurricanes in Florida during the 1 month. So the very next month in October, this is a couple years back, we had a one-hour phone reading scheduled. The only thing this gentleman knew about me was my name was Dennis. I lived in Seattle. My wife, Wanda, would be on the phone. It was a one-hour reading.
Yeah.
On a Saturday. 4 days before this, I'm standing in my bathroom. I'm looking at a tube of Crest toothpaste depleted. Throw it away in the wastebasket. I have two vials of Colgate toothpaste upside down draining. And my inner thought, not outward, inner thought, is I hope my wife has some toothpaste in her bathroom or I'm going to have to go to the store and buy some. That's my thought.
Yeah.
2 days before the interview, I'm at an Albertson grocery store. I see a big long line back by the meat counter, and I see it's on sale, 50% off. Well, I haven't done this in 3 years. I fill up my cart almost. They freeze. Boom. Okay, here comes the reading, the phone reading. It's my son, my mother, and some other family and friends coming through. And then he goes, partway through, he goes, your son wants to call you Sam. I go, Sam? My name's Dennis. He goes, Sam? He says, yeah, you know, Sam, like Sam the Butcher on the old Brady Bunch movie. He says, what does that mean to you? I said, well, it's pretty good validation, I guess. I says, I was just at the meat market the other day, so he might have saw me. She goes, yeah, that's probably what happened. Good. Then we're going on. And he goes, okay, this is just weird. He said, I'm only going to tell you what I'm hearing. I can't make nothing out of this. I said, okay. He says, he wants you to go to the store. He wants you to buy some toothpaste. It doesn't matter whether it's Crest or Colgate. Does that mean something? My wife goes, no. I said, yes, it does. He goes, really? I said, trust me. I said, you just hit a grand slam.
Yeah.
I says, I've got faith in your readings. He says, really? I said, you pat yourself on the back, give yourself a cookie, and let's move on. That was fantastic. I'll tell my wife later on what happened. I have this on tape, you know, because this was a tape reading. I got this on tape.
Yeah.
Then it goes on, and then all of a sudden he goes, are you writing a book? And I just kind of, my mouth drops open. My wife's upstairs. She can't see this. I go, yes. He said, well, your son wants to know why his name is not on the front cover in front of your name, because he's given you all of this information. Okay, so I start backpedaling and defending myself. Oh, wait a second. You know, the book's about Sean, and this, and this, and this. And then I hear him laughing over the phone a little bit, giggling. I said, what's going on? He said, well, while you were defending your honor, so to speak, I asked your son, is he serious about all these things he was saying? He said, no, I busted my dad's chops in real life. Why should it stop now? And so after that reading, I think it was the next day or something like that, I'm just sitting there just thinking. And I look up and I says, you know, you really want your name on that cover, don't you? And that's when I called back to Author House of Publishers and I says, hey, stop the presses. I says, I need his name put on the cover. He said, well, it's already in production. It'll cost. I says, I don't care. I says, I need to have his name put on the cover in front of my name. It'll say Sean and Dennis Spaulding. I said, okay. So they stopped what they did. They redid it, charged me more money, and that's what you see now. And that's a story how I why I advertise that.
Yeah. And so you kind of spelled it out here. The goal of your book really is to sort of open the doors so people kind of open their minds to the idea of communicating with their loved ones in the afterlife.
Yeah, basically, like I tell people, even though you're going to find I did a lot of research and a lot of seminars attending that and dealt with a lot of mediums, and I still do to pass on messages. The whole essence of the whole book says you do not always need a psychic or a medium in your life to have contact with your loved ones. They're around you. They see what's going on. They know what's happening in your life. All you have to do is find out how. When somebody dies, it's their job to let you know they're fine, they're happy. It's your job to try to find out how they're doing this. Some people will turn themselves off to that. No, they don't believe that, or, you know, they don't want to do that, or whatever. But everybody, all through life, has these moments where you go, wow, the hairs rise up on your back, this and that, something happens, you're thinking about something, you might be thinking about somebody that died, a thought goes through your mind, but you have always had that. I've been here before, I've done this, I've done that. Well, I react to those. I take notice of those. I write down everything I can think that happens to me at that time. I've got a basis now to start with. Now, if this happens again, you know, I'm ready. I look around. Maybe that's your loved one trying to say hello. Maybe they're trying to stop you from doing something. Maybe you're in a dangerous situation. But it's not good to ignore it.
Yeah.
It's good to listen, look around, and just take notice of what time of day is it, what day is it, what's going on in your life, where are you at, what's going on. Whatever you can remember, write it down as soon as you can, And then if it happens again, you know, you've got something to work with.
Yeah. And then you alluded to your next book, Messages from the Next World, His Signature. How about a little preview of that? When we can expect it? And is it sort of continuing the story here that you detail in My Search for the Afterlife? Or is it a different sort of tone type book? Or just preview it a little bit for me.
Basically, it would be probably like part two of book number one.
Yeah.
It's just various messages that I show of what's happening. And let me put it this way. It is a continuation of book number one, but it also shows how my journey is continuous to this day. Let me just say that in April of this year, I had a reading with a medium who I was going to be on her radio show, and as a gift to me for being on her radio show a couple of times, she was going to give me a reading.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I told her, when I first, you know, mentioned that I wanted to be on her show, that I wanted to pay for a reading. And she said, I didn't send you to my website to solicit you having a reading from me. I sent you there for more information. I said, wait, you don't understand. I says, this is part of my, what I do, my research. I says, readings help me. They help other people in the spirit world for me to help them. I said, this is what I do, and that's why I want it.
Yeah.
Well, she understood, and she did my reading for free. And rather than an hour reading, it went on for an hour and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And during this time, I'm sitting there, and she goes, your son, Sean, is bringing through another energy with him. I says, okay. Then she goes, have you lost another child? My jaw drops. Now, this is just April of this year. The book was out last year.
Mm-hmm.
My jaw drops. I don't say anything. She says, has anybody ever said this to you before? And I'm sitting there, you know, the tears are coming.
Yeah.
I says, first off, no one has ever said this. And I said, yes, I do. And I had to tell her a story. I had an affair with Sean's mom. We were married 5 years. I had an affair. I got married to Sean's mom while I was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I went into the military, what was it, a week after high school. You know, so you never got to sew your own, so to speak.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, but I'm not making excuses for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love this girl. And, well, she became pregnant. And between the two of us, we realized the situations and, you know, what we thought had to be done at that time,
mm-hmm.
convenience. Well, she had family back in Italy, and that's kind of where she went back to. Well, for 35 years, almost 35 years this year, I have carried the guilt, the shame, anxieties over an abortion. I have never talked about that with anyone except two people. I talked about that with Sean about 4 years before he died. He died at the age of 24. I explained to him problems in our marriage of, you know, what went on with his mom and I, and probably why we got the divorce and the affair and what had happened. And with my wife, Wanda, right now, we've been married. It'll be 28 years next month.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew about this. And so talking with the lady, I don't want to give everything away because that is part of book number
two. And you're going to detail that in book number two?
That will be detailed in book number two. That's going to probably end book number two. And that is going to be able to help people that have lost a child that never made it into this world. And all I could say is when I left that reading, I'm upstairs like bawling, like I'm starting to do right now.
Oh, man.
To tell my wife what just happened.
Yeah.
And she is so open to this now that we talk about this now. If a radio station wants to bring it up, which they haven't sometimes, I talk about that because it can help people that have suffered this. And that's what my website is all about also. It doesn't have to be the child that was in this world you lost. It can be those through an abortion, miscarriage, stillbirth. That I always sat on the fence on the issues of pro-choice and pro-life. I heard about it. I never made a stance. I was like, well, if the woman wants to do it, that's her right. Well, they probably shouldn't. Would I do it? I've done it. Would I do it again? Probably not. But when I've had this reading, you talk about now I take a stance. I don't get up in somebody's face You know, it's still, you have a choice, but here, let me tell you my story. Let me tell you 35 years later of what you're weighted down with and what that energy, that spirit comes back to tell me. You know, tell me then how you feel.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds powerful. When do you expect book number two to be released?
Well, when you self-publish various things like that, you don't have a major publishing house behind you.
Yeah.
Everything is out of your pocket. Your success is going to be how much of a success can you afford at the beginning to get your message out. You know, and so it depends. I probably have to recoup something so I can move forward with a second. But with what I'm doing and our journey together with my sons and what's happening, I don't doubt it's going to happen. I just have to believe it's going to happen and take care of the stuff as it comes up. And I'm in chapter 11 right now. And since I said I write chronologically, I am up to the end of end of November of last year. And I gave it away that says that's probably going to be the ending of my book. Well, that happened in April of this year. So I'll probably, once I catch up to May of this year with my story in the writing phase, mm-hmm. that's probably when I'll start thinking about moving on to let's get this going too.
Nice.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Drop me a line when you think the new book will be released,
right.
And we'll bring it all back together again then. All right, well, let me go over the website here. It's www.sean39s-corner.com, correct?
Right, that is one way, but when I started promoting myself on the radio, somebody came up with a unique idea, and we use also www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. You can get to that both ways, and it's a user-friendly website. We've got high speed, and we have dial-up. It's a little slower, and some of the pictures and things like that, you're warned that it's going to take a few minutes for it to download, stuff like that. But if that's the only way you've got to go, well, that's the best way to go. There's a lot of information on the site. You can follow my interviews, where I've been, what I've done. Upcoming interviews will announce. The Garden of Flowers is on there.
Yes.
And other different stories and telling you about the book and various things like that.
And how can people pick up the book? Through Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, that kind of stuff, and where else?
Great. If you go to the website, you can go to AuthorHouse.com. That's one way of getting it because it's a little bit cheaper. Both the soft cover and hardcover, you can get it from AuthorHouse.com. Save a few bucks that way. But also on there is Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can walk into any retail bookstore, ask for the book. It's not on the shelves yet. But you can order it. The soft cover, I hear, comes within a week's time, maybe less than a week. And the hardcover takes a little bit longer, like most other hardcovers. But anybody should carry it. You just ask for the title, My Search for the Afterlife, and they can pull it up on the computer.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Dennis, for being on the show. Your story is amazing. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, my mother read the book. She really loved it as well. I think it's an important book. It's a really touching book. That's really the best way I can put it. It really tugs at the heartstrings on a lot of occasions in the book. The book is My Search for the Afterlife. You can find also more information on the website, www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. Dennis Spaulding, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Tim, for having me. It was great. I enjoyed it.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio. I want to thank Dennis Spaulding for coming on the show and sharing his amazing story with us. You can find out more information on Dennis, his book, and his research at www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. I want to thank Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Joe V., and Ralph Molesworth of BanalofAmerica.com for your help and support with the website and the audio series. These folks are putting out some amazing and thought-provoking columns covering a wide range of esoteric topics, and you can find these columns at BanalofAmerica.com. We're not just an audio show, folks. Make banalofamerica.com part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. If you are a longtime Banal of America audio listener and you want to help support the audio series, click the PayPal button at banalofamerica.com, make a donation, help keep the show afloat. A program like this costs money, not just for long-distance phone calls, but also for bandwidth and a whole bunch of other stuff you wouldn't even imagine. And a lot of that cost comes straight out of my pocket with help from BOA Audio listeners who make donations. So if you can afford it, make a donation. We'd appreciate it tremendously. Next week on Banal of America Audio, we'll be discussing the mysterious and frightening creature known as the Chupacabra with Scott Corrales, author of Chupacabras and Other Mysteries. Scott will be going in-depth with us on the Chupacabra. We'll be covering it from a host of different angles. Plus, Scott's going to talk about Latin American ufology. Where are the differences? Where are the similarities between Latin American ufology and American ufology? You'll find out next week on Banal of America Audio. Stay tuned after this for an extended preview of Scott Corrales on next week's show. And thus, we conclude another week of Banal of America Audio. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. This is Tim Banal, signing off.